This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Some in financial markets wish they got more policy specifics from the Trump team. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. In early trading, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down more than 100 points, about 0.5%. The other key indicators, the S&P and the NASDAQ, also started down. Some market participants are getting more cautious about a Donald Trump economic dividend. On Thursdays, we consult Diane Swonk at DS Economics in Chicago. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Share prices seem a little more tentative this morning. Some people are drawing a line between that psychology and the president-elect's news conference yesterday.
Yeah, one of the real issues is that you really need a roadmap on policy. And remember, the market rallied on promises, not actual policies. And what the market was looking for was, what are the actual policies that are going to get us to this pro-growth phase that the market was betting on? And what we're seeing is there really is a lack of a roadmap here. Without a roadmap, there's no way to sort of steer Congress into the direction you need to go, because Congress is not the uniform body that many people think it is. There's a lot of fighting within the parties and across party lines.
Because if you look at the history of administrations, big changes need to happen early. That's just an axiom of politics.
Exactly. And one of the things, I was at the American Economic Association speaking last Friday, and one of the things that came up from former CEA chairs like Glenn Hubbard, Greg Mankiw, Austin Goolsbee, when you've got this sort of unified government, you only get about 1 year. And if you don't have a preset plan to get what you want to do through Congress, it's not going to happen.
A bipartisan group of former chairs of the Council of Economic Advisors. That's very interesting. Diane Swonk at DS Economics. Thank you.
Thank you.
19 U.S. states kicked off this new year by increasing the minimum wage. Some are linked to the costs of living, others because of ballot initiatives or legislation. As for the effects, it depends on which experts you ask. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore has more.
Okay, here's what a lot of economists, not all, but a lot, say about the minimum wage.
When the minimum wage goes up, the price of Big Macs goes up as well.
Eric French teaches economics at University College London. The cost is passed on to consumers, but it's usually very tiny, a few cents, even for a large wage increase. Second?
The minimum wage, at least at the range of minimum wages that are typically found, we don't see large disemployment effects.
That's John Horton at NYU's Stern School. So short-term, minimal job loss. But economists disagree about whether even a small amount of job loss is okay.
Because it's the lowest wage people who are going to experience the job loss.
David Newmark is at UC Irvine. Economists also aren't sure about the long-term effects of minimum wage hikes. And Newmark asks, does the minimum wage do what people want it to do?
It's pretty hard to find evidence that minimum wages reduce poverty.
Maybe in another 80 years, we'll have a consensus on all that. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
One of the most powerful managers of economic policy in the world has just about a week left on the job. I spoke yesterday with U.S. Treasury Secretary Jacob Lew about a range of issues, including the need for close international cooperation to keep global financial hiccups from erupting into financial forest fires. This at a time when the new administration is emphasizing America first in its international dealings. The full interview is at marketplace.org right now. I also talked to Secretary Lew about moves in the new administration to deregulate Wall Street, including making changes to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau set up after the last financial crisis.
I think it would be a grave mistake to roll back the protections we have in that area, both because I think consumers warrant that protection, but also because financial stability demands it.
Some critics of the CFPB believe the agency is not accountable enough with a budget that Congress is not allowed to manage.
It is very much like the Federal Reserve Board in terms of the way it's set up and funded. It's not unlike the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation in terms of how it's set up and funded. It's basically set up as a bank regulatory agency which is supposed to be independent to some degree of the political process. It's one of the reasons why coordinating amongst the financial regulators is so hard. Their independence is important. It's highly valued. But there are areas where they need to share information and work together, which is why I think you need both an independent CFPB, but also a mechanism where a Treasury Secretary can coordinate across financial agencies.
More with outgoing Treasury Secretary Jack Lew on rolling back the Wall Street rules enacted after the 2008 financial crisis and other topics. They can be listened to on demand at marketplace.org. This year's Sundance Film Festival is opening next week with a glitzy screening of the sequel to former Vice President Al Gore's Oscar-winning documentary, An Inconvenient Truth. It's not the only climate change doc on that schedule. Marketplace's Andy Euler has more.
Last summer, Sundance organizers were discussing how they thought filmmakers were shying away from making movies about the environment. Maybe it's too complicated. Maybe it's too political. John Cooper, the director of the film festival, says they weren't trying to be political. They just wanted to give people a chance to have the discussion. Then they started getting submissions.
Not only were we already planning on making it something, we actually had the films to back it up.
The subset of films and projects is called The New Climate. And the issues range from a discussion of climate science to a profile of workers at a Chinese recycling factory. Ann Merchant is with the National Academy of Sciences.
Film and television give such an opportunity to give voice to those stories.
Ed Maybach agrees. He's director of the Center for Climate Change Communication at George Mason University.
Climate scientists are trying desperately to share what they know with the public about our changing climate, but they simply don't have a platform from which to tell stories.
Folks at Sundance say they're not sure if the new subset's going to be permanent. The festival starts next week. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.